a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. Good morning. I'd like to welcome you all to the 2012 Senate Health and Human Services Committee. Before we begin, we have some new faces on the committee and some new staff, so I would like to first welcome Senator Rampelberg is going to be joining us. Welcome to the committee. And then we have a new LRC staff person, Amanda Reese. And Amanda, if you just want to say hello and give a little background for the committee members.
Hi, my name is Amanda Reese. I'm a new attorney with the LRC, and I graduated from Drake University Law School, and I'm just happy to be here, so thank you.
Thank you. And Cindy Lauder is joining us back again as secretary. Our Paige is not in the room, so I can't get her, but I will have her introduce herself. With that, I would then ask the secretary to call the roll.
Bradford.
Here.
Holine.
Here.
Krebs. Rampelberg.
Here.
Schleckaway. Krause.
Here.
Hanhoff.
Here.
Thank you. We do have a quorum. Just a couple of housekeeping things for those of you that are regular at these meetings. You have a few things that you already know, but just a reminder, anytime you want to testify, I would ask you to please sign in. Anytime there's any questions of the committee, I would ask you to please go through the chair. You all know my cell phone rule is that if it goes off, 25 cents ahead for every person that's in there, and it will be to the charity of choice of the chair. So last time, one and only, now you all know. With that, committee members, do you have anything in particular that I might have missed? We're ready to go then. With that, this morning, the Department of Social Services has asked if they could provide us some background information on community block grants. I would welcome Kim Malsom-Risdom, the Secretary of the Department, and I know she has someone with her, so please come up to the table. And again, for our home listeners, welcome to them, and please identify yourself when speaking. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Kim Malsom-Risdon. I'm the Secretary of the Department of Social Services, and with me today is Carrie Johnson. Carrie is our Division Director for the Division of Economic Assistance. What I would tell you about that division is that is the often the face of DSS in that staff within that division serve people in over 60 communities across our state, and so to the degree that folks come to our office, they're often dealing with staff in this division, and so I'm very pleased that Carrie's here with me, and we'll try to answer any questions that you have. Would be happy to take those as you wish, Madam Chair. And
why don't you do your presentation, and then at the conclusion, sure, if there's questions.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We're here today to talk with you all about the Community Services Block Grant, which is a federal funding source within our department. We want to share with you a little bit about how those block grant dollars are used, some of the requirements of them. It is a requirement that we visit with the legislature once every 3 years. That's the federal requirement. And so that's what we're here to do today. On your first slide, you'll see that the Community Services Block Grant was created in 1981. It is 100% federally funded, and the goal of that act when this funding became available at the federal level was to reduce the causes of poverty in communities within states and to really help very low-income people become more self-sufficient. And so when you think about what our Division of Economic Assistance does, that's very consistent with the goals that we're working with within a variety of programs. We are, the Department of Social Services is the designated lead agency within South Dakota for receipt of these funds. As the lead agency, we do have to put together a state plan, and we are operating under one right now, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And we'll be submitting our next 3-year state plan here this summer. the public hearing around that state plan will actually happen in July when we have the draft document ready. And so there will be another process whereby we hope to get public input and comments and make sure that people understand kind of what's in the plan. So that will be scheduled yet for this summer. There's some assurances that have to be part of that state plan, and so we just thought that we would outline those for you. We obviously, as the state agency, may have to make sure that programs are complying with the conditions of the funding. That's not unique to this funding source by any means. There's requirements around agency collaboration. Again, no funders want to see their funds used for duplicate or, you know, services that are available otherwise. Community boards, boards that that have to do with the agencies that receive these funds from us have to look a certain way, and so there's some requirements around that. The state actually has to ensure that at least 90% of the funds that we get as part of our block grant are in fact allocated to the eligible entities. And then the other part of that is then there's obviously an administrative expenditure cap. In terms of the entities within South Dakota that are eligible for receipt of these funds through our state plan, we've got, the state plan itself speaks to what those eligible entities are and what they look like. There's actually an application process for receipt of the funds. But this really has to do with community action agencies in our state. And so they're also known as community action programs or CAPs. And so that's the group of providers across the state that receive these funds. And you can see those listed out on slide 5. Inner Lakes Community Action Partnership, which is headquartered in Madison, but the next slide shows you the map of where they serve their Minnehaha and Lincoln County are part of their catchment area. Northeast South Dakota Community Action Program, again, headquartered out of Sisseton, but they do a lot of work in Aberdeen and other northeastern parts of the state. ROCS, or Rural Office of Community Services, headquartered out of Lake Andes. And then Western South Dakota Community Action Agency, which is headquartered out of Rapid City. These agencies have been in existence for many, many years. This is one of, you know, several ways that they try to help, again, low-income citizens across the state through this particular funding source. The map on slide 6 shows you just kind of the coverage areas of those different community action agencies. And so the funds that they receive through the Community Services Block Grant are geared towards people with, you know, that live within those catchment areas. Speaking of funding, slide 7 shows and outlines a little bit about the dollar amounts. Now, one thing that is part of this particular block grant is that tribal programs are eligible to apply directly to the federal government and run their own CSBG programs, and 4 different tribes do that. They're listed out there for you. That would be the Oglala Sioux Tribe, the Rosebud Sioux Tribe, Sisseton, Wahpeton, Oyate, and Yankton Sioux Tribe. The bottom part of slide 7 then shows how the state's total award and kind of what those funding levels have been. Again, that's 100% federal. And then it shows you what the state allocation has been, and that's been, again, what our department receives, what we then subgrant out to those community action agencies, and then what the tribal programs, the 4 tribal programs, have received in CSBG funding. We don't determine how much CSBG funding the different tribal programs get. That's a federal determination, and it depends on how many apply and kind of the formula that the federal government uses. This funding level, you can see that it actually went down a little bit in fiscal year 11. The one thing I would tell you, we manage a lot of different federal funding sources within the Department of Social Services. This one tends to be one that is often highlighted for potential cuts. And so I would say out of the different funding sources that we do work with, it's a little bit more volatile in terms of whether it's going to be included in the budget. So far, we haven't seen any eliminations, but you'll often see this one targeted for elimination altogether. Nevertheless, our funding has remained fairly consistent, no huge swings. The formula itself, so with the state allocation, the state agency allocation, the dollars that we use, we have a, you know, within our state plan, we outline exactly how we allocate the funding that we do get among the eligible entities, which are those CAP agencies. The factors that go into that are population in need, the eligible population within the catchment area, and then there's a factor in there for geography, which when you look at kind of those catchment areas, we feel that that makes sense, especially when you see how big some of the wide breadth of miles that some of these agencies are covering. So those are the factors that go into how we allocate the funds. The bottom of slide 8 then shows you just percentage-wise how those different CAPs, different CAP agencies fare relative to the allocation of funding. Inner Lakes Community Action Partnership receives 30% of our of the funds that we have available. Northeast, 17. Rocks, down in Lake Andes, receives 22%. And then Western Community Action Agency receives 31%. The goals within our state plan that we feel have served the state well and the folks that rely on funding through this program include how, you know, in general, how to help communities have options available to low-income individuals. Again, that's who this funding is geared towards, so that they can become self-sufficient, not rely on this funding for long periods of time, nor any other funding that we work with to help families. Housing, emergency assistance, are two very, very big needs that we see folks come to community action agencies for help with. That will be situations, for instance, where a crisis has happened within a family and there is no other alternative. And if there is, not this kind of funding available through the CAP agency, a family may become homeless. That's a pretty typical scenario where we see emergency assistance needed, and this funding provides a limited amount of that. So housing and emergency assistance are two big parts of this. And then overall, just how do we help families and individuals become self-sufficient? That might be, and I think we've got some examples here, but that's things like helping folks that are maybe just starting a job and they've got some upfront costs. Again, how can this funding be used where there is no other funding to help a person, buy a uniform or get some transportation lined up so that they can keep their job, those kinds of things. Very next slide. There we go. The services provided gives you a sense of what kinds of things do CAP agencies do to meet those overall goals, again, consistent with the federal act. And so gaining employment, income management, financial counseling with the economic downturn. I know we've had more requests of people that are struggling with how to move forward in those kinds of areas. Again, emergency assistance and housing assistance are very big parts and really kind of, when we get folks that come to the Department of Social Services with those kinds of needs, we work with CAP agencies a lot to have them be able to help families. Home rehabilitation is part of some CAP agency programs. Meeting nutritional needs and augmenting other programs that are available in those areas. Transportation, especially in some of those more rural areas, can be a big need for some of these CAP agencies. And then just the basic linkages to other services and supports. You know, everybody says that, they're the payer of last resort. This funding really does kind of provide for some gap funding where there just is nothing else available. But nevertheless, it's short-term in nature. There isn't a lot of it, and so it's really incumbent on these programs to help people get connected with other things that are available in their communities. Slide 11, and that's actually our last slide that we had prepared for you, just tells you a little bit about the folks that are actually served through this funding source. You can see that the income criteria is on the lower end. It's 125% of the federal poverty level and below for a family of four. That equates to less than $28,000 a year. And so that's to be eligible to receive any kind of assistance through the CSBG program or Community Services Block Grant, you had to meet those income guidelines. And then last year, our agencies as a whole, not necessarily with only this funding, but those agencies served over 42,000 people in 18,000 different families at those income levels and below. So I think it gives you kind of a sense of the need, and CSBG is just kind of part of that solution, if you will. So with that, that's kind of the basics of the program. We'd be happy to try to answer any questions about it or anything else.
Great. Thank you. Are there questions for the Secretary? Senator Rampelberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Secretary, several questions. One, do you know that there? I've been involved in some other nonprofit boards in the western part of the state, and I know that the agency out there is mentioned from time to time, but I've not heard of a lot of collaboration between a lot of these agencies that are attending to do the same thing within credit counseling and housing and emergency things. I know even South Dakota Housing Authority has some ability to do some things as well. Do you folks have a way that you are partnering with them in some way and communicating back and forth as it relates to serving some of these clients that really need the help?
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator. That is a great question, and I think it's something that is to some degree always evolving to the, because community resources appear and dry up, and so there's that landscape is always kind of changing. We do within our local offices really try to help agencies that we're working with, both in terms of how we refer people. And so what I would just tell you in terms of how we work with CAP agencies is because they're first of all, they're eligibility is limited in terms of who they can serve. It's you're really at the lower end of the income threshold. So that kind of helps us funnel in terms of who we actually refer. But we refer to any other available resource before we refer to the CAP agencies because of the nature of the funding that they have and really what they're geared to do. So we do a lot of that. But the other thing that agencies in their applications to us for this funding have to tell us, you know, how do you coordinate at that local level? And, you know, and that is part of the requirements and part of the expectations. And, you know, I just think it's something that we have to keep on top of all the time because it's hard work. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The other thing I was wondering about if, you know, the church that I belong to for many years has had a benevolence ministry. Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult because we get a lot of requests and it kind of spans the, you know, the whole spectrum of what people have needs for. I was just wondering, the thing we've struggled with there is the criteria by which we measure how those that we support and those that we don't. I was curious, do you have kind of a guideline or something that your people utilize within the CAP agencies that you have kind of given them?
I'm going to ask Carrie if she could help you.
Yeah, they actually do. I'm sorry, Carrie Johnson, Division of Economic Assistance. They do have an eligibility application. So similar to the ones we use in other economic assistance programs where they look at income. It's not an asset-tested criteria, but they do have an income criteria, and it has to be below 125% of the federal poverty level.
Senator Krause.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up question for you, Carrie. You said they do have an AFID. What did that mean? You said they have some sort of criteria, but I didn't hear it.
Oh, I'm sorry. They have an application that they complete to request assistance from the CAP agencies, and they have to be below 125% of the federal poverty level. So okay. It's an income test that they utilize on that application.
Just one quick follow-up. Is there any provision within the federal rules to about employment? Should they be applying for a job or on a job, or is that considered at all? Is it just income?
not as a condition of eligibility, but really they're seeking to help people retain employment and gain employment as part of what they do. Some of it is emergency services, mm-hmm. for certain. Some is, as Kim said, housing and other needs. But those things that can help people gain employment and retain employment are certainly part of their work plans.
Thank you.
Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. First of all, I want to thank Kimberly for all the good work she does. I have many, many calls from my constituents that are involved in her department, and she has never failed to answer those questions and those people's with the greatest amount of dexterity, and I'm just indebted to her for that. I wanted to ask you if in the tribal end, when you talk about this 663,000, is that off reservation or is that within the boundaries of the reservation?
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator. Thank you for your kind comments, too. I appreciate those. The 600-some-odd thousand dollars that you see for the tribal allocations are for tribes running their own CSBG programs. Now, that would be all four tribes that do that. The 600,000 is for all four of those tribes, but to the degree, I believe all the tribal programs are specific to reservation areas. The remainder, the state amount, would be for non-tribal covered areas.
Thank you. Follow-up is that do they then have a program directly to the federal government, too?
Madam Chair, they do. They apply. Tribes have the ability and do apply directly to the federal government, which would include the goals and just kind of the services that they are looking to allocate their dollars to.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I have some questions, and I'll refer to the handouts because I wrote my questions on there. On page 4, when you talk about the administrative expenditure cap, when these programs, the four that you have selected, is there then an administration part that is also included in their request as part of running this program, and what's the percentage of that?
Senator, there is a that is part of their request. And Carrie, do you know the percentage?
There isn't a requirement that it be a certain percentage. However, we do ask them to separate out their administrative costs from their direct service costs and recommend less than 5%. Because the state cap, our own administrative cap, is 5%. We recommend that for them as well.
Thank you. Correct me if I'm wrong here. They also have contracts with other state programs, so how do they allocate so that overhead is just, or that administrative cap is just placed for that program, the Community Block Development Grant? Is that?
Senator, they would have to allocate those administrative costs, you know, according to their funding sources. Most agencies tend to use, they allocate their administrative costs by the percentage of those different funding sources. They might have other ways of doing that, but they've got to have a recognized method to do that.
Thank you. On page 5, how is the decision made who's to award those grants to? You've identified 4. How did that come about, or what was the process for that?
The eligible entities within the federal law spells out that are defined as community action agencies, and this just happens to be the only 4 that we have in this state. So it's not I wouldn't call it a hugely competitive process in terms of new agencies or providers or anything like that.
When you say federal law spells it out, so are there other groups? You can only be a community action agency to apply for this community block development. You can't be another kind of entity out there.
That's correct.
Okay.
Other than a tribal entity.
Right. I mean, tribes can, yeah.
Then on page 7, when you have your total award, does that mean the Fed and the state total together?
Madam Chair, the total award is what the state of South Dakota receives. Again, these are all federal dollars, so it's all 100% federal. The state column is what the state program receives. The tribal program is just what those four tribes get.
Question, can someone be eligible for both for the tribal and for the state?
Madam Chair, no.
Okay, so it's one or the other. Okay. Then on page 8, the percentage of the allocation, how was that decided? You said based on population need and geography, so those are the two criteria how you allocated the dollars.
And I would just clarify that it's the population of individuals under 125% of the poverty level, because that's what their requirements are for the program.
Do you have any type of evaluation for these programs as to if they're meeting what they need to be doing for providing the services and that, and what's that involve?
Madam Chair, the programs, as we mentioned, all have to submit their plans in terms of the activities that they're going to undertake and the numbers of individuals that they're going to serve. And so we do monitor that progress and ensure that that they're meeting the requirement what they put out in their plan.
Can I ask how you do that?
Yep, we have staff that provide a monitoring kind of activity. We get is it just annual reports or is it quarterly actually, right?
We get monthly reports that are expenditure reports. So we have that. They also do annual required federal reporting as well. So it's the overall outcomes, but then individual monitoring of each agency. The Act requires us to do that every 3 years. We do that every year. And we have monthly contact, monthly statements from every agency.
With the federal funding, does that provide a grievance process out there? Say if you had somebody that thought they were eligible and they were denied or they were cut off, or, you know, is there that grievance process built in since we've got Fed dollars in there?
Madam Chair, I think that really falls under the definition of a community action program, and so those kinds of things are outlined in terms of what those programs have to have in place,
okay,
which would include those kinds of processes for consumer protection.
Great. On page 10, when you talk about the assistance that's provided, is there any time factor that someone is on this program? I mean, that time runs out, or you could be on it for a long time?
Madam Chair, thank you. That's a key part, and I think that ties into Senator Krause, your question about helping, you know, how does this help people be employed, or is there that kind of requirement? Again, the nature of this funding is short-term assistance, and so we don't see people that get an ongoing benefit just because the dollars aren't there to support it, and that's not how this has been set up. And so depending on the type of service, that length of time that somebody's getting help will vary somewhat, but oftentimes it's the family that's being evicted, if they don't come up with half of their rent that they just couldn't make work. And so the cap helps them for that one half a month's worth of rent, and then that's it. I mean, that's the nature of the assistance that this funding provides.
One last question, and that's on page 11. Just so this only applies to families, or are individuals also?
Individuals.
Mm-hmm. Individuals. And is there a cap? Is that also that they have to meet the poverty for whatever there is for one, two, or three?
That's correct.
Okay. And one other thing, to supplement this program, can the local CAPS do fundraising or put a fee on for services or for, you know, I guess I look at transportation, a bus that travels around. Can they assess those people that ride those buses, a copay or something?
Madam Chair, that's another really good question. This funding, to the degree that it is used to support services like transportation, obviously it's not going to duplicate what would be available for people to help with those kinds of costs otherwise. But sliding scales are often a part of CAP agency programs, depending on the service. You'd see that with financial counseling in particular, where folks may have to pay, you know, kind of depending on their circumstances. And so this funding can fall within those realms in terms of how CAP agencies administer their programs altogether.
Great. Thank you for your indulgence of my questions. Any other questions out there? Yes, Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I this is more of a statement than a question, really, but I, my extended family, of course, is, many of them have used this program, and I assure you that it's not a simple thing. You just don't walk in and say, hey, I'm poor and help me out. You have to document very, very much what you get. In fact, sometimes they're so confused that they call me and say, you know, here I am and I don't understand. I go in and they tell me, because of this, I'm not eligible. I just moved off the reservation. Maybe you were being taken care of over there, but all of a sudden that's all cut off. You're away from familiarity and places. So I think what people get confused, very confused, that this is just a handout and that everybody there is just working the system. That's not true. Most of those people are in need of what they're getting. And a lot of times it isn't even adequate in this day and age. And not to any fault of our programs or the people that do it. It's the fault of the fact that there's a differentiation between living in Rapid City and living within the boundaries of the reservations. Your obligations are much more severe, and there's much more people there already there. So it's a really complicated thing. But I want people to know that it's a very, very needed thing, and it does really help a lot of people who deserve help. And it isn't all one way. I know a lot of them who have, after once they got going and got into the, involved in work, I see them all the time, and they're a step up. They're off it. They're on their own. They're doing their own rent and things. And I know those people are kind of lost in the light, you know, and we're looking at all the people who come. But I definitely want to commend you, Kimberly, and the program itself is, like you say, is totally federally funded. I think these kinds of programs, the state of South Dakota, sometimes we don't give credit for what that does for our state, because in these programs, they all involve money that rotates within the state of South Dakota. In other words, every federal dollar that comes in this program stays within the state of South Dakota. So it's a real benefit, and I want to thank you for the actual application. I think you do a good job.
Thank you, Senator, for your comments. Last time, anything else? Well, thank you, Madam Secretary, and thank you for coming and presenting the information. You bet. Just a reminder, one of the reasons I'm having these presentations is, again, so we can bring ourselves up to speed as to what's been occurring this past year. On Friday, we will hear from the Lieutenant Governor, and he will talk about the health exchange work group that this met this summer. And then next Wednesday, the Department of Health with Linda Dugard will provide an overview of the infant mortality work group and those. I will tell you, we were probably looking at time. We will act on some bills, and we'll be assigning those out to do that. So I thank all of you for your attendance today. With that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Moved. Second.
Moved by Senator Rappelberg, seconded by Senator Hoy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. We are adjourned.